So Nicolas is a rhetoric researcher from a professor from the University of Lausanne. So we are very happy that he accepted to leave his retreat to talk about the evolution of sex chromosomes in frogs. Thank you, Nicolas.
Thank you. Yes, so I will speak about some work we have done on the few years ago on the evolution of sex chromosome in frogs, and especially in relation with a potential role of sex antagonistic genes on the evolution of this sex chromosome. So this is kind of picture you have already seen, this highly differentiated sex chromosome. Indeed, if you Google search an image of sex chromosomes, you are highly likely to find this kind of highly differentiated sex chromosome of a male mammal. If you turn to birds, you will find a very similar picture, except that degenerated and gene poor chromosome is found in females, not in males. That's why we call it W instead of Y, but the system is basically the same. And also, as you know, there is a generally accepted model, widespread model, to explain the evolution of the degeneration of this chromosome, this so-called canonical model. I will not enter into the detail because you have seen this kind of picture several times during these 2 days. But basically, this model assigns an instrumental role to sex antagonistic genes in the arrest of recombination on sex chromosomes and the degeneration of this small and gene poor chromosome. This is a very nice model. I like it very much. And it is intellectually appealing, but the problem is that it has very little empirical support. Maybe one reason is that it cannot be tested in birds or mammals or these kind of lineages with a already highly degenerated sex chromosome, just because if you find some sex antagonistic genes on this chromosome, they might have accumulated long after the degeneration occurred. So it's better to find model organisms with sex chromosomes in a very early stage of differentiation, and ideally with a polymorphism, such that you can compare different levels of differentiation. And this is what we find in frogs. For instance, this is common frogs, European common frogs, Rana temporaria. This is the karyotype, and you see that all the 12 or 13 pairs of chromosomes are here, 13, yes, are perfectly homomorphic. There was no differentiated sex chromosome. And in fact, we know from genetic markers that one of these pairs is a sex chromosome. It's a number one for this species, just because a series of markers that we have for this species show male-specific alleles, and these markers map to the chromosome one. So we know from this first that sex determination is genetic. Second, that we have an XY system because this sex-specific alleles are only found in males, and that chromosome 1 is used for sex in this species. And if you look at the patterns of recombination of this male-specific or sex-linked markers, you find a very different patterns of recombination between males and females. So this is the recombination map of the markers we had this time on microsats on the chromosome 1, and you see that for these markers we have a map length in centimorgans for female, which is about 100 centimorgans, and in males we had 0. So strong contrast in the pattern of recombination. And this is actually quite a general pattern. We did similar studies in several groups of frogs, which are genetically quite not related at all. Like, for instance, Hyla arborea. This is work we have done with Alan Bresford, who is actually in the audience. And we also find a very similar system, also an XY system. And this is for one pair of tree frogs. The number of markers we found on the different chromosome of a female, and these are the numbers of markers, of SNPs, we found in a male. And you can see that all align on the diagonal, except for linkage group 1, which is here, where you have a huge excess of markers, SNPs, in the male. So it also means there is some genetic differentiation between X and Y chromosome, despite the fact that this chromosome also entirely homomorphic in Hyla arborea. And to us, this was a little bit paradoxical, because clearly these are chromosomes which are in early stage of differentiation. There are no morphological differentiation, and all the markers we find amplify both on the X and the I, and the Y. They simply have different alleles, but there is no degeneration. And despite this, we have a very large non-recombining segment. So, as you can see, most of the chromosome is not recombining in males. And this paradox actually was solved when we found, the picture is bad here, when we found that this heterochiasmy, the fact that males and females recombine completely different, is the same on all chromosomes. What you should see here is that for all chromosomes, this is a map for the female, and this is a map for the male. For all chromosomes, we have a longer map for the females. But more importantly, you can guess something here, that all the markers, so females recombine all along the chromosome, but all these markers here, they converge to a single spot here on the male map. And you see this huge peak of SNP density in the male, which means basically that the whole chromosome is not recombined in males, and males only recombine at the tip of chromosomes, and these lines here would converge to a single point at the end of a female chromosome here and here, which means that males recombine only the tip of chromosomes where females do not recombine. So the patterns of recombination are completely different. You have here the typical female recombination, and this is a male recombination, only at the tips. And this is for all chromosomes, not only for the sex chromosomes. Actually, this has nothing to do with sex chromosome. We could find, decide this just looking at some species with a ZW system. So there are a few frogs with a ZW system, including in other tree frogs. And these two species, they share a ZW system since more than 10 million years ago. And still, they have exactly the same patterns of recombination. So the female is ZW, and you have a lot of recombination between the Z and W chromosome, and in males, which are Z, Z, and they only recombine the tip of chromosome. So absence of recombination is here in the homogametic sex. So the point here is that we do not need to invoke sexually antagonistic genes to explain the arrest of recombination. There is something constraints in the male meiosis, and the Y chromosome will stop recombining as soon as it becomes strictly male-linked, because automatically recombination will stop, because the Y is in a male, and males do not recombine. Another important point to make with the frogs is that we find polymorphism in the level of sex chromosome differentiation. Basically, in Rana temporaria, we find three kinds of males. The one we call XY males, where the X and Y are differentiated all over the chromosome, except for the tips where males recombine anyway. So, the two strata, one, which is a sex determining region, and two, which is the remaining, or most of the remaining of the chromosome, are differentiated between X and Y. XY node males, they only show differentiation at this region, basically one gene, which is here, which is DMARTY1, and which show differentiation, different alleles between males and females, and all the rest is similar between males and females, so genetically identical between males and females. And finally, we have a third category of males, XX males. They don't show any differentiation, genetic differentiation between males, between X and Y, even at this region. So basically, you cannot distinguish them from females on the genetic from the genes. Polymorphism correlates with genetic contribution to sex determination. In XY system, we have a strict or nearly strict genetics examination in the sense that if the father is XY, then all offspring that inherit the paternal Y chromosome develop as males. There are a few exceptions, but rare. XY note, we have a leaky GSD system in a sense that the offspring that inherit the paternal Y note, they tend to develop as males, but there are many exceptions. Those that develop as, that inherit the X paternal tends to develop as females. And in non-GSD, so in XX system, we have non-genetic examination in the sense that there is no correlation whatsoever between the sex of the offspring and the paternal haplotype on any chromosome and the maternal chromosome either, maternal haplotype either. So we think this sex examination is not genetic in these ones. And this data fits well with the so-called threshold model of sex determination. The idea is that you have the expression of a gene, sex determining gene, that decides the sex of the individual. In the case of Rana temporaria, it's most likely DMRT1, the level of expression of DMRT1 during the sensitive period of development. If you are above the threshold, you develop as male. If you are below the threshold, you develop as female. And so if the expression of DMRT1 on the Y is much higher than on the X, then you will end up with a situation where all the XY are above the threshold and the XX are below threshold. So XY individuals develop always as males and XX as females. So you have strict genetic discrimination. But you have you might have this situation with XY nodes males. There is also some differentiation in the average level of expression of DMRT1, but there is some overlap. Due to random noise in the expression of genes. And some XY individual develop as females and some XX develop as males. And finally, you have a situation where actually there is no genetic differentiation between males and females, and this individual sex is determined by stochastic noise in the expression of DMRT1. So importantly, because females recombine, as soon as an XY develop as a female, then XY will recombine, and this will prevent the differentiation between X and Y chromosomes. That's why we do not find any differentiation between X and Y in this population, except at DMRT1. And also, interestingly, we have populations where we have mix of XY males, XY naught males, and XX males. And this is actually an ideal situation to test this canonical model of sex chromosome evolution, because you have within the same population males with differentiated sex chromosomes and males without sex chromosomes. So one prediction from this model would be that XY males are better at attracting females or sowing eggs than XX males, just because they have this sex antagonistic male beneficial genes on the sex chromosome. So to test this idea, we sampled hundreds of males from the one single population where we had the mixed occurrence of the three kinds of males. And looked first at sexual dimorphism and also whether the morphology of males might differ between XY, XY naught, and XX females. So you can see there is a lot of sexual dimorphism in this species. The coloration is different, the size is different, the body proportions are different. So we measured all these males, a series of XY, XY naught, and XX male, and actually they look exactly the same, whatever the genetic background. These were the proportion of the different males we had in this population. So proportion of XY males, XY naught, and XX males. So this is observed proportion. And these were the males that were successful in mating with a partner. And the proportion basically is random. There is no statistical difference between this distribution and this one. So XY male was not more likely to mate successfully with a female than an XX male And we also sampled clutches of eggs, and we genotyped these clutches to see whether father was XY or XY naught or XX. And we find also a distribution which was not significantly different from this one. If at all, we had a slight excess of XX males among the successful fathers, but this was not significant. Also, side observation, we find sometimes XY females, and these females are perfectly fit and fertile, doesn't seem to be to have any male beneficial, female detrimental genes on the Y chromosome. And in the ZW species, we find exactly the same level of sexual dimorphism as in XY species. Just remind you that in ZW species, the sex chromosome is recombining a lot in females, so there would not be any possibility to fix female beneficial male detrimental genes on the W. Other prediction from the canonical model would be that you have more sex bias genes in XY males than in XX males, and specifically on the sex chromosome. In principle, you should have the opportunity to fix male beneficial or genes which are expressing sex bias genes on the sex chromosome. So we did a little bit of transcriptome. We found strong sex biases in gene expression, of course. This is a ratio, a log of a ratio of expression in XY male versus XX females. So in general, genes, they have negative values, or most of them are more expressed in females. Some of them are much more expressed in females, others are much more expressed in males. So a lot of differences. So this is a contrast between XY males and XX females. If we make the contrast between XX males and XX females, so they are genetically identical, but we see exactly the same pattern, no difference from the contrast between XY male and XX females. And if we contrast XY male to XX male, then the pattern is drastically different, so the scale is different. There are a few genes which are more expressed in XY males and a few in XX male, but this is mostly due to the small sample size. So, but the contrast is very drastic between the two situations. And also, this is a sex chromosome, number one, and there is absolutely no difference between sex chromosome and autosomes in the term of sex bias gene expression. So our conclusion is that sexual dimorphism is actually controlled by the differential expression of autosomal genes much more, or maybe uniquely, rather than the fixation of male beneficial genes on the sex chromosome. Last point I want to make is that there is also a potential role of sexually antagonistic genes in the dynamics in the dynamics of sex chromosome turnovers. And the logics of this is exactly similar to the one beyond the canonical model. If you have, let's say, a male beneficial mutation on an autosome, this will favor the fixation or the spread of male determining mutation on this chromosome, just for the same reason that in this situation, the male beneficial gene is more likely to be transmitted to sons and to daughters due to linkage. So this our model developed by Van Dorn and Kirkpatrick. So we try to test this. This is a work with Dan Jeffries, which is also here. We sampled a series of species from the Hanidae, true frogs, and we made a phylogeny, and we tried to find the sex chromosomes in this species. So we were successful in some of them. And so here, for instance, you have Rana temporaria, the common frog that I just presented, an XY system with sex determined by chromosome 1. If you go to Rana arvallis, you find the same situation, XY system, chromosome 1. If you go to Rana iberica, the Spanish common frog, then you find an XY system, but on chromosome 3. Here you have also an XY system, but on chromosome 5. So altogether, we found that 5 chromosomes out of 13 were used for sex determination with a kind of cycling between this role. We had some species, for instance, where you have 2 chromosomes. So some population here use a chromosome 3, and other population use chromosome 1. And the same is here, some population with chromosome 2 and others with chromosome 3, and so on. So very frequent turnovers, cycling between 5 pairs, which are often found a 6th chromosome, and also an important trend, a strong bias towards maintaining an XY system. You can see that all the species have an XY system, except here an exception, the Glandirana rugosa from Japan, where some population are XY and others are ZW. And so we think, we argue, that this pattern is not consistent with the role for sexually antagonistic selection in driving turnovers, because first, with this, with sexually antagonistic, so male beneficial mutations are as likely as female beneficial mutations. So you should have, you should find transition to ZW or XY system with the same probability, and we don't find this. And also, once sexually antagonistic genes is linked to a sex determining gene, this should strongly prevent further transition, because in this case, the male beneficial mutation will be transmitted to daughters and vice versa. It's much more consistent with the role of the accumulation of deleterious mutations on non-recombining chromosome. So this cycling, quick cycling, is expected because, as I mentioned, males are not recombining, mostly, and therefore, as soon as the chromosome is co-opted for, sex determination, then you will start the degeneration of hundreds of genes or thousands of genes on this chromosome. And second, the transition which is motivated by the accumulation of deleterious mutation should, in fact, if you transition to an other XY system, then you eliminate the Y, the old Y chromosome, and X is fixed as an autosome. If you do the reverse, if you transition from an XY to a ZW, you have to fix the W, the old W, as an autosome, which of course is a very bad idea if it is crippled with deleterious mutations. Okay, the conclusions. We didn't find any evidence for role of sexually antagonistic genes in the evolution or dynamics of sex chromosome in this frog species that we studied. And so we cannot consider these sex chromosomes in frogs as a supergene. Thank you.